Class is back in session. It's time for Baptist Basics University from BaptistBasics.org.
All right, welcome back to Baptist Basics University. Once again, I'm Matthew Gage. I appreciate you listening today as we jump into lesson number 6 in our series, our Bible survey series. And today we'll be wrapping up the Old Testament with a look at the minor prophets. Now, last time we covered what we call the major prophets, and I'll just review real quick that there are 17 books in the Bible that we could classify as the prophets, and these are books by or about prophets. And there are 17 of these, about 16 different men, the 17 in counts the Book of Lamentations. The first five of which, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentations, Ezekiel, and Daniel, we classify as major prophets, mainly because of the length of the book. And then we have the minor prophets, which are, I think, undoubtedly the most overlooked portion of the scriptures. They just kind of get lost at the back of the Old Testament. By the time people get done, you know, with Isaiah and Ezekiel, and especially Daniel, we're just ready to move on and jump into the New Testament. So a lot of times the minor prophets, and even myself studying this, I'm having trouble feeling really confident that I'm even prepared to do this, rushing through these, because I am not greatly familiar with them. I have read them all. At times I have studied portions of them, but as I say, this is, you know, they used to call Africa the dark continent because it was, you know, they didn't know anything about it and it was unexplored and unknown. Well, if there's a dark portion of the scriptures, it's this portion, because it's just not very well known. It's not preached out of very often. Sunday school teachers don't go through it. But it does not mean there's not good stuff there. It's just it's so easily overlooked. And part of that's just its placement. By the time we get done with what we call the major prophets, you just want to jump on in to the New Testament, and instead of just going through book after book of prophets, you know, and the judgments that are coming, and which, you know, is a major theme in most of them. But today we are going to cover the 12 minor prophets, and we're going to do the best we can just to go through, give a flying overview of these guys. Part of that is because, for the sake of time, like I've said before, I don't have time to spend an hour or two and really dig in deep, and I'm not prepared enough to go an hour or two in most cases on these books. But so we're gonna fly through them. We'll give an outline, and talk kind of about what the theme of the book is. And just kind of some interesting points. I'll point out just a few things as we go through. But really just kind of give you an idea of what the themes of the books are. And we'll just kind of go from there and see how this goes. Okay. We begin where we left off last time. We wrapped up the book of Daniel last time. Well, if you turn over to the next page in your Bible, we have the book of Hosea. Now, Hosea takes place between 785 and 725 BC. The subject of this book is God's love for his wayward people. I'm not sure, I don't want to say there's a sadder, more sad book in the Bible, more depressing. There's depressing. Ecclesiastes is depressing. But more of a heart-rending story, shall we say, than we find in the book of Hosea. Part of Hosea's ministry in following God is that he has Hosea marry a harlot named Gomer. And I know immediately you think of Gomer Pyle in the TV show, but this woman's name was Gomer, and boy, you can't think she was much of a didn't have very much beauty with a name like Gomer, but, you know, maybe she did. But through this struggle of a marriage that they have, God is illustrating how his people, how Israel has turned away from him continually. And is just, as I is a very, very sad story. Chapters 1 through 3 deal mainly with the marriage of Hosea and Gomer, where they're married. She leaves, goes back to her old ways. Hosea is actually going and getting her kids and raising them. And then finally, God commands Hosea in chapter 3 to even go back and get her again. So, and then that theme is built on in chapter 4 through 5. God's explaining that, Israel has played the harlot to him and has not been faithful to him, and that has worshiped other gods and turned away. So, even there's a big theme in chapter 7 through 8, chapter 11, verse 8 especially, is that, God could still bless them. God wanted them to come back if they would, and they could escape judgment if they would just turn back to him. But they would not. They were unwilling to. And then something that I failed to notice in our previous lesson on the prophets is that even most of the time, even with prophecies of doom and gloom, there is rays of sunshine that come through at the end. God doesn't just leave it hopeless. There's usually a promise attached to these. And I should have pointed that out, just neglected to, but you probably saw it, like Isaiah, the first part is judgment, the second part is promise. Well, we're going to see that same theme come throughout the minor prophets. That's just how God gets his message across to us, is, here's the bad stuff, but okay, let's leave it on a high note. And he says, even though, Judah and Israel will be desolate, they will be carried away and captive, Israel will rise again. And in the end days, peace and prosperity will return to Israel. So that's actually what happens in the book of Hosea, chapters 13 and 14, go back to that same theme. Now, you notice when I said minor prophets and we think about how they're shorter, did you notice there's 14 chapters of the book of Hosea? There's only 12 in Daniel. So it just goes to show you, the kind of the man-made division that we make there. There's really no sense why, if Daniel deserves to be a major prophet based on length, so should Hosea. And so anyway, all right, the next book we have is the book of Joel. Let me flip over here. I've got my J. Vernon McGee Through the Bible commentary right here handy for reference as we go through these. The book of Joel, 800 BC is your time frame on it. The subject is judgment on Judah. Another pre-captivity prophet. They're prophesying the Babylonian captivity. And in fact, all of these until I did not realize this, but there actually is a little bit, not chronological, but all of these until the last three that we will cover are all pre-captivity. So just that really, I did not realize that they were ordered that way, but not until we get to Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. Those are actually post-captivity, but the other nine we cover are all pre-captivity. So I thought that was neat as I was looking at that before I started recording. All right. Anyway, Joel, 800 BC. So he's a little, got to go back a little bit from Hosea. And here's the kind of a classic short minor prophet. And his subject is judgment on Judah, on the kingdom of Judah. And outline, we'll see the devastation of the land, chapter 1, verse 1 through chapter 2, verse 17. And then we'll see the deliverance to come, that ending on a positive note. And that's chapter 2, verse 18, through the end of chapter 3, which is verse 21. And one of the big things that's prophesied in here is a plague of locusts in chapter 1, if you just kind of want something interesting in here. And in chapter 3, 1 through 15 talk about the Great Tribulation, and then chapter 16 through 21 deal with prophesying back to the millennial kingdom, which we talked about last time, and how the fulfillment of almost all the promises of Israel take place there in the millennial kingdom. So that's a common theme for the prophets to jump ahead to when they look to the glory of Israel that will come. It's going to come. It's going to be a long time. It's going to be during that millennial kingdom. Okay, the book of Amos. Book of Amos, time frame 787 BC. The overall subject is apostasy brings judgment. That is, turning away from God will bring judgment. And broad outline, first would be a judgment on surrounding nations, chapter 1, verse 1 through chapter 2, verse 3. Two would be judgment on Judah and Israel. That's chapter 2, verse 4 through 6:14, the end of chapter 6. And then the third division would be future visions. That's chapter 7 through 9. Okay. Now, this is one of the things. Amos is one of the guys we know nothing about. We know when he prophesied and stuff, but he's not mentioned anywhere else. So we just have his book. And I think there's three or four, as I was looking at this again just a few minutes ago. I don't remember the other ones. But, this is just the only way we know them is we have this book. They're not mentioned in Chronicles or Kings or anywhere else, but we have their book. And this is one of them. And this one's actually very good. I love the way he lines this out. And I heard a preacher preach from this one time and point this out, and I love it. That he starts out by giving judgment that's going to come on other places, not Judah, not Israel. So here's where he starts. He starts in chapter 1, judgment against Syria for cruelty, judgment against Philistia for making slaves, judgment against Phoenicia for breaking treaty, judgment against Edom for revengeful spirit, judgments against Ammon for violent crimes, and the judgments against Moab for injustice. So that's J. Vernon McGee's outline. But he's doing this. Can you imagine? Everybody's like, yeah, that's right. Yeah, Moab, boy, they're bad. Yeah, the Philistines, oh, yeah, they're bad. Yeah, God send judgment on them. And then all of a sudden, he does a 180 on them and starts preaching against them. So you can imagine they've been going good. And like, boy, this guy's good. We like this preacher. He's telling it like it is. Yo, boy, preach on those Phoenicians a little bit more. And Syria, oh, give it to them, Brother Amos. And then he turns around, chapter 2, and finally says, oh, yeah, hey, by the way, you too. Imagine that the amens just kind of ceased going right there. This was a sermon. But that's the main thing I want to point out in this one. And chapter 9 goes into a little bit of the dispersion, that the Jews will be dispersed, but then they come back and the kingdom is restored. Common theme in these books. Okay, flip over here. Okay, Obadiah. Obadiah was the one I was thinking about just then. He's one we know absolutely nothing about. I believe Amos is too. But Obadiah is one we know next to nothing about. I will point out the interesting feature of Obadiah is how short it is. I believe it is actually the shortest book in the Bible by length, if I remember correctly, but it is definitely the shortest in the Old Testament. I'd have to count words to see how it fares against 2nd and 3rd John. But it is a very, very short book, 21 verses. And 888 BC, very early. And the theme of this is judgment on Edom. Now, Edom is those descendants from Esau. We're going to go way on back there. But that's Esau's descendants, and who had been a thorn in the side of Israel for a long time. And finally, judgment is coming. And our outline of this is first, judgment on Edom, and that's verses 1 through 14. And then number two, Restoration of Judah. That's verses 15 through 21. And let's see here. Let's see if there's anything here I want to throw out that's in there. But you notice, once again, we have judgment, and then we have promise. Now, there is no promise for Edom. Edom's time is up. They are done. But we do see, we do see there, once again, at the very end, that, you know, everything is back. They're back in Israel. And upon Mount Zion shall be deliverance, and there shall be holiness, and the house of Jacob shall possess their possession. That's verse 17. So, once again, it closes with, you know, seeing the blessing returning to Israel and Jerusalem. Okay, now to probably the best known because of the Sunday school stories and the debate over the scientific accuracy thereof, the book of Jonah. 862 BC is our time frame for it, and the subject, I'm just going to say, the unwilling prophet and the revival in Assyria. Let's go through our outline, then we'll go through and tell the story. Chapter 1 is Jonah's disobedience. That's, in fact, each chapter is its own point here. Chapter 2, Jonah's repentance. Chapter 3, Jonah's message. Chapter 4, Jonah's resentment of Nineveh's repentance. So we know the story. God tells Jonah to go to Nineveh, which is up in Assyria, that is some of the meanest, cruelest people around. I love even telling the story to little kids. You can get into it. But God tells him to go up there and tell him to repent. Judgment's coming. Well, Jonah says, no way. Hops on the ship going the other way. Storm blows up. You know, they find out, hey, it's Jonah, the reason why, you know, somebody's not happy with us upstairs. So they take Jonah, throw him overboard. Jonah tells him to. He hits the water. The storm clears up. Jonah is swallowed by a great fish. Now, the Old Testament says great fish. The book of Jonah says great fish. Jesus, interestingly, says a whale. So people say, well, you know, God, you never said it was a whale. Well, actually, Jesus did in the New Testament, at least in the King James Version. I don't know what other translations say, but the King James Version actually does say whale. And so chapter 2 is Jonah in the belly of the whale, 3 days and three nights. Also comes into play as the sign that Jesus says, you know, that 3 days and three nights he'd be in the earth, that he would basically be in the grave 3 days and three nights. And I wanted to chase a rabbit trail there. I'm not. But Jonah comes to his senses, prays, repents, asks God for forgiveness. The whale spits Jonah up on the shore. He goes to Nineveh, preaches his sermon, and basically sets up shop outside of town to wait and see, you know, the fire and brimstone and everything, you know, just see Nineveh destroyed. And he's disappointed that they actually listened to him. They repented, and judgment wasn't coming. And God has to kind of get to Jonah a little bit and make him come back and see the light, which is actually kind of interesting because he never really does. It's like, poor Jonah, you know. And basically it just ends with, you know, the last verse is, and should not I spare Nineveh, the great city wherein are more than 60,000 persons that cannot discern between their right hand and their left hand, and also much cattle? I mean, there's no record of Jonah saying, hey, God, you know what? You're right. Boy, I was wrong. No, it just ends with God saying, hey, I'm right. So I don't know if Jonah ever really did get right or not. But anyway, classic stuff for Sunday school. And basically, that's the story. Jonah is more of a narrative story. There's not really the prophetic value to it as there is, you know, some of these other books are just the message the prophet was giving. The book of Jonah, it's basically just a story. But we see, for instance, like Christ talking about the sign of Jonah in the 3 days and three nights, you know, there is prophetic value to it, and there is some of the symbolism that is carried on. But for the most part, it's just the story about Jonah and the whale and Nineveh. Okay, moving on now, the book of Micah. And Micah, time frame 750 to 710 BC. and kind of, you know, vague subject would be God's judgment and redemption. Now, this is one, actually, I'll tell you what, I really struggled to find an outline or a theme that I liked for this book. My AMG Concise Bible Survey, he wants to say that the major theme is something along social injustice, that, boy, if you don't take care of people and you know, the rich don't take care of the poor, and, you know, if they abuse the poor, stuff like that, that God will judge you. That's more of a modern revelation. Now, it's in the Bible, but the social injustice thing is a relatively modern vintage. So I don't really think that, I mean, that's an element of this, but I don't think that that really carries the theme, and that's not the entire book of the Bible. Now, that is kind of maybe a part of it. I can see that in the first few chapters, but I can't say the whole book is about that. That's way too broad of a spectrum to use. So that's why I've used many different books, or at least a few, not many. I've used three or four, and even did a little bit of looking online to really try to get good outlines to use and make sure I'm getting a good theme and a good outline to use. And in that case, I didn't like what he said, so we kind of went with J. Vernon McGee's outline on this one. And anyway, the outline for the book of Micah, chapters 1 through 3 is a future judgment for past sins. Chapter 4 through 5 is future glory from past promises. And chapter 6 and 7 is just about repentance and forgiveness. And J. Vernon McGee talks about how the name Micah actually means who is like Jehovah. And he actually uses that kind of as a theme through this. But the first part, and it does, the second, third chapter get into specific sins and gets after the leaders for abusing people. So he is definitely preaching against like social injustice kind of things. But the essay is just one or two chapters here of these seven chapters. And chapters 4 and 5, getting to the last days, and it talks about the first coming of Christ before the second coming and kingdom. That's chapter 5. Chapter 5, I put a little note here. I didn't do a lot of like little interesting points and stuff in here just because I got 12 books to cover and I want to get through them. But chapter 5, verse 2 actually predicts, is the verse that predicts the birthplace of Christ. Let me flip over here. But thou, Bethlehem Ephratah, though thou be little amongst the thousands of Judah, yet out of thee shall he come forth unto me that is to be ruler in Israel, whose goings forth have been from of old, from everlasting. So there's the verse that prophesies that Jesus Christ, the Messiah, would be born in Bethlehem, specifically. And basically chapter 6 and 7 is talking about, you know, repenting in the present because of what you did in the past, and that God will pardon iniquity, and that's kind of the theme of the last chapter. Okay, so that is Micah. Boy, I was kind of afraid this was going to be a short lesson on some short books in the Bible, but we're going to end up pretty decent here, I think. I didn't want it to be too long. I've been going way too long on these. All right. The book of Nahum, time frame for this is 713 BC. Now, this is kind of a companion to Jonah. Now, Jonah takes place, the episode in Jonah takes place roughly 150 years before Nahum. And Nahum's subject is Nineveh's judgment. And basically, the book is about the judgment that's coming to Nineveh, and the justification of it to a certain extent. So, the outline we have, the first section is judgment and justice, and that's what I'm talking about. It's talking about justice, how justice fits into the goodness of God. That's chapter 1, verses 1 through 8. And then we have the prophecy of the coming destruction of Nineveh. And that's verses 9 through 15 of chapter 1. And then finally, chapter 3, chapters, the section 3, we have the fall of Nineveh, which is chapters 2 and 3. So don't get things out of order when you read this and think, oh, well, hey, why is God judging Nineveh? I thought, you know, Jonah said they weren't going to because they repented. Well, that's because we have 150 years difference, but Assyria went back to their old ways and judgment was going to come on them. So that's the book of Nahum. Okay, now we have the book of Habakkuk. Habakkuk, that's one of the fun ones to throw out if you're having like a spelling test, just to see how many ways you get it. H-A-B-A-K-K-U-K. It's a fun one to spell. Okay. Habakkuk, about 626 BC. The subject would be need for holiness. Need for holiness and judgment. And the way that this book is set up is kind of interesting. Let me give this out. Well, let's talk about this. There's basically Habakkuk asks a question, God answers it. Habakkuk asks a second question, God answers it. And then the third chapter is kind of a prayer that the prophet gives. So the first section is the first question answer. How will God deal with Judah? Chapter 1, verses 1 through 11. And basically the question is, you know, God, are you going to permit evil? And God's answer to that is, hey, I'm raising up Babylon, the Chaldeans, to come and punish Judah. Well, the second question then is, how can you use Babylon, you know, a pagan people to judge your chosen people? And then the whole of chapter 2 is devoted to answering that. You know what? I messed that up. The whole of chapter 2 is... I messed up the outline there. I'm sorry. I just caught that. That section 2 should be 1 verse 12. Chapter 1 verse 12 through the end of chapter 2, which is verse 20. I'm sorry. I messed that up. I just caught that. But basically, all of chapter 2 is dealing with answering that and talking. But there's a little bit of a process that goes through there that before God gives the answer. So, but anyway, that is the book of Habakkuk. So we move on to the book of Zephaniah, the last of our I missed one here. All right, I put bookmarks in my my Bible commentary here. I've been using this reference, and I skipped over Zephaniah for some reason. I tell you what, talking about how many minor prophets were, I just took a sheet of printer paper and was ripping it in little pieces and putting them in here as bookmarks, and I kept having to rip them up smaller and smaller because I just kept needing more and more, and there wasn't enough. Wasn't much of a paper left. Anyway, the book of Zephaniah, the last of the pre-captivity prophets, we'll cover. Time frame, 630 BC. And the subject is the judgment of Judah and Jerusalem. Really focusing in, and that's one thing I probably should have done is put together some kind of chart, but there's so much overlap in this, but with dealing with the primary subjects of each prophet's ministry and prophecies, because some focus on more on Israel, some on, you know, like say Nineveh, like we just covered, but Zephaniah really focuses in just on Judah and Jerusalem, and some do both, you know, and some, you know, hit everybody like Amos did, but Zephaniah just focuses in, you know, the judgment is coming on Judah and Jerusalem. And the outline for this would be, is going to be judgment at the day of the Lord, verses chapter 1, verse 1 through chapter 3, verse 8. And then the second section would be salvation at the day of the Lord. That's chapter 3, verses 9 through 20. And the similar thing that we've seen before, first we see that judgment... That you know, that judgment is coming. And then even goes, at first it talks about Judah and Jerusalem. Then it talks about earth and all the nations in chapter 2 and 3. And then we wrap up in chapter 3 by, you know, that there is no more judgments. And, you know, basically looking ahead to the, like the millennial kingdom. So, that is Zephaniah. So now we turn to the last three, and all these three are post-captivity prophets. And their messages are a little bit different. They're not talking about the judgment that is to come, because there isn't really judgment to come. They are really focused on the people, and it's not that everything was going great. Every one of them is addressing issues. But we have quite a different theme, though, because, you know, let's say we keep talking about, even as like we just did in Zephaniah, we have the first part of the book is about judgment. The second part is about, you know, promises that are made, and, you know, the glory that's to come, salvation that's to come. Well, we don't have that same structure in these books. It's a little bit different. So the book of Haggai. And time frame, 520 BC. And the subject of this book is motivation to rebuild the temple. And we know the exact dates of these prophecies based by what he gets, you know, Haggai verse 1, in the second year of Darius the king, in the sixth month, in the first day of the month. If you correlate and transfer that over from Hebrew months to our months, Javon McGee has those here in his notes, just to give you an idea of when this stuff took place. There are five of these, and I don't have this. Well, let me give you the outline I have. The first is the call to rebuild in chapter 1. Chapter 2, verses 1 through 9, is the future glory that's going to come. And then chapter 2, verses 10 through 20, is the blessings of building the temple. So, but these five messages that he's going to give, the first took place on September 1st, 1520. The second on September 24th, 1520. Let me explain these. The first one is verses 1 through 11, chapter 1. And that's September 1st, 1520. September 24th, 1520. And that's verses 12 through 15 in chapter 1. And then October 21st, 520 is chapter 2, verses 1 through 9. December 24th, 520, is chapter 2, verses 10 through 19. And chapter 24, December 24th, 520, is chapter 2, verses 20 through 23. So it is broken up into five different sections. And basically, you had Zerubbabel, who was the governor, and he's trying to get the temple built and not getting any cooperation. And there's some wonderful language that's used, and they talk about, verse 4, is it time for you, O ye, to dwell in your sealed houses, sealed as in like a ceiling, C-E-I-L, ceiling, and this house lie waste. So he's like, you know, he says, basically, hey guys, you know, you've got nice houses to live in, but look at the temple. It's still a wreck. You know, what are you guys going to, are y'all going to build it? What are you doing? You're taking care of your own self. You know, you're not taking care of God's things. So that's the first message that he gives. And then the people respond to that, and the temple is rebuilt. And just to skip ahead for the sake of time, if we go ahead and we'll just look at you can go through this really quick things that happen through it. But then again, ends up with the promises about the glory that is to come in chapter 2, verses 20 through 23, or all the way to the end, chapter verse 23. I messed up on the outline. I only had it through verse number 20. In fact, it confused me so bad, I had to go back and start re-recording this section. So, but anyway, but it talks about in chapter 2, verse 22, and I will overthrow the throne of the kingdoms, and I will destroy the strength of the kingdoms of the heathen. I will overthrow the chariots and those that ride in them, and the horses and their riders shall come down, everyone by the sword and the brother. You know, and that day, saith the Lord of hosts, will I take thee, O Zerubbabel, my servant, the son of Shealtiel, saith the Lord, and I will make thee as a signet, for I have chosen thee, saith the Lord of hosts. So you got all this promise of stuff that's, you know, that's coming ahead. And so anyway, that is the book of Haggai. All right, so now to the book of Zechariah. Now, the book of Zechariah, let's cover the stuff first. Time frame 520 to 487 BC. He actually overlaps a little bit with Haggai. And his subject is the salvation of the Zion's remnant, of the Jewish remnant, the people who are back in the land after the captivity, basically saying everything's going to be okay. So, flip back over here, get to my outline. Okay. All right. The book of Zechariah is very interesting book. If you have to pick out one book, in the Old Testament to the Old Testament what the book of Revelation is to the New Testament, it probably would be Zechariah. He deals a lot with end time stuff. Now, Daniel does also, but Zechariah really deals with a lot of things. There's actually 10 visions that he has in the first 6 chapters, and they're all these apocalyptic type things, and some of them are quite open to interpretation, and I've heard people try to explain them. Sometimes I've been impressed, sometimes I haven't been, but that's chapters 1 through 6. That's our outline, so apocalyptic visions. And then there's a little bit of a break. Chapter 7 and 8, or J. Vernon McGee calls it historic interlude, so it kind of breaks away from prophecy to deal with an issue. But basically, an issue comes up about fasting, and he gives an answer that, you know, that to do it right, basically it's threefold, that, you know, if the heart is right, the ritual is right, but if the heart is wrong, the ritual is wrong. So you got to have the right heart to do what you're doing. It's not just what you're doing. You got to have the right heart in it. And then chapter 8, you know, God's purpose concerning Jerusalem is unchanged by the ritual. You know, basically God's still going to do what he's going to do. All right. And then chapters 9 through 14 are prophetic burdens. And the first of these, chapters 9 through 11, deal with the first coming of Christ. And the second group, chapters 12 through 14, deal with the second coming of Christ. End times type stuff. So deal a little bit with the Antichrist in chapter 11. And as I say, it's a good study, especially if you like end times prophecy. Zechariah, a lot of times, is very, very overlooked, because it's just kind of, you know, in the middle of the minor prophets. People will go to Daniel. People will go to Daniel and Revelation are the two main ones if you want to study like end times prophecy. Zechariah's got a lot of good stuff too with that, so don't miss out on that. Okay. So let's wrap this up with our last book, the book of Malachi. I heard somebody say they just got saved and they thought it was the book of Malachi. But anyway, it's the book of Malachi. This takes place 397 BC. This is the last Old Testament book to be written. And you'll notice 397 BC. Yeah, 397 BC. Almost 400 years before the birth of Christ. The birth of Christ, I haven't started really working on my New Testament notes, but generally speaking, a lot of historians that I read, and they all have guesses, but a lot of people will say Christ was born not at 1 AD, like they tried to set up the calendar to reflect, but probably it was more like 4 BC, and that's the date I usually use when I'm teaching, that Christ was born 4 BC and died in 30 AD. But, you know, that can be off a little bit. That's not that big a deal. We're just kind of guessing. You know, educated guessing if you study it out. But there's a 400-year period. Yeah, And those are called the silent years and the intertestament period. And I might talk for just a brief minute about that after we get done dealing with this. But this is the last book of the Old Testament, you know, in the Old Testament as we have in our Bible, and also as a last word kind of through the prophets to Israel. And the subject is bring back righteousness. Malachi just kind of, he's got to deal with some issues, shall we say. So let's look at this. The outline, chapter one, the first section, love of God for the nations, chapter 1, verses 1 through 5. Chapter 2, sins of the priests, that's chapter 1, verse 6 through chapter 2, verse 9. Section 3, sins of the people, chapter 2, verse 10 through chapter 3, verse 17. And then finally, a look further on into the future, once again, with chapter 4, verses 1 through 6, and the day of the Lord. That's our fourth and last section. Now, things about Malachi is, this is the one, if you ever hear a preacher say, all right, turn your book to Malachi, you almost know that he's going to be preaching on tithing. So, I'm trying to find that here, that verse. I was going to read it. And it says, wherein have you robbed me? When tithes and offerings. So I'm trying to find it. I don't see it. I'll look at my Bible real quick. But anyway, that's usually, if you ever hear a preacher say, you know, hey, turn the book of Malachi. Most people, you know, that have been in church long enough, they just kind of grow and like, okay, here we go. Here's another message on tithing. And what do you know? I don't have it underlined in my Bible. Wow, I must not be a very good preacher. I hadn't preached on tithing very much. but anyway, that's anyway, if you hear them talk about Malachi, that's usually the running gag, is that you know, they think, oh yeah, we're gonna, you know, preach on tithing. So, but Malachi is much more than that. In fact, even has some end times prophecy thrown in there with there at the end. He actually talks about, and J. Vernon McGee actually has another section broken in, because chapter 3, verses 1 through 6 talk about the messengers that are going to come, and is a little bit more of a prophetic version, prophetic feel to it. Oh, where do you go? I found it. Malachi 3:8. Will a man rob God? Yet ye have robbed me. But ye say, wherein have we robbed thee? In tithes and offerings. So there you go. That's the verse they almost always go to start getting you to give more money. Okay, chapters 4 starts out is a description of the great tribulation period. For behold, the day cometh when that shall burn as an oven, and all the proud, yea, and all that do wickedly shall be stubble. And the day that cometh shall burn them up, saith the Lord of hosts, that it shall leave them neither root nor branch. So it talks about the thoroughness of the judgments that's coming. Verse 2, but unto you that fear my name shall the Son of Righteousness arise with healing in his wings, and ye shall go forth and grow up as calves of the stall. So it talks about the blessing, the Son of Righteousness, talking about Christ. And ye shall tread down the wicked, for they shall be ashes under the soles of your feet in the day that I shall do this, saith the Lord of hosts. Remember ye the law of Moses, my servant, which I commanded unto him in Horeb for all Israel, with the statutes and judgments. And this is interesting. This is why the last few verses here I think is very interesting. If there's a last word God wants the children of Israel to know before this silent period that's coming, which I guess they don't know that's coming. But what is he saying in verse 4? Remember the law of Moses. And it's like, you know, stay true to who you are and the commandments I've given you. Then verse 5, behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord. So there's a prophecy about the end times that's thrown in there. And then verse 6, and he shall turn the heart of the fathers to the children and the heart of the children to their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. So Anyway, so it ends up with a little bit of a prophecy, very far-reaching. So Malachi dealing with some present-day issues, but also throwing in some prophecies that have like end times implications. So there we go. We made it through the minor prophets. If you're still with me, I hope that it's been a help. I hope that you've enjoyed it. I've been very nervous about recording this one, and I hope I really haven't blown it. Just because, like I said, I'm not, I'm as guilty as anybody about neglecting studying the minor prophets, and to put together a lesson like this is one thing, but to go in depth on these, listen, I'd have to do a lot more studying, and I'm sure it's come out in this that I could have been a little bit better prepared, but since we're just doing a survey, I hope that gives you an idea of what these books are about and you know, when they took place and some of the things that happened in them. Hopefully been, if anything, maybe it's a kind of piqued your interest into getting in and studying these, and you'll learn a lot from them. There's a lot of great stuff there that we could get into. And as I traced a few rabbit trails myself in there, but anyway, I hope it's been a help and a blessing to you. And that wraps up the Old Testament. Now, I said I would cover the 400 silent years. Let me kind of do that very briefly. There are 400 silent years between the Old Testament and New Testament. And there's quite a bit of things that happen. I'll just cover very briefly. The Persian Empire is still in control of Israel. They are not independent. And let's see. The Persians will in turn be defeated by the Greek Empire. This is all according to the prophecies, you know, in Daniel, through Alexander the Great. Conquers the Persian Empire. When Alexander the Great dies, Israel is, I could never remember which division it was given to, but you basically had Alexander's Great kingdom was split between four of his generals, and you had Seleucus founding the Seleucid Empire, basically Syria, and you had the Ptolemies in Egypt. And they fought over the land of Israel in that region. And it changed hands a few times, but for the most part, the Seleucid Empire held control of it. And it's considered the Greeks kind of being in control, even though it's a fraction of the, you know, the Greek conquerings of Alexander the Great. Under Antiochus Epiphanes, who's Antiochus IV, he's talked about in the book of Daniel. He's the one that offers the abomination of desolation, picturing the Antichrist to come later. One of the greatest villains in Jewish history is Antiochus Epiphanes. Tried to do away with the Jewish religion and the Jewish identity through a number of laws and things that happened. Well, and Epiphanes, he actually thought he was God. That's kind of what that name kind of means. He was crazy. Well, anyway, a little bit later on, the Jews do finally regain some independence through the wars of the Maccabees, and they never really achieve full independence per se. They do kind of cut a deal with the Persians, but still, like the first Jewish coins that are minted actually, you know, basically were printed with permission by the Persians. Then they became more and more independent, and you had the Maccabean kingdom established. And for a while there, this is like the first and second, or pretty much second century BC, into the first century BC, Israel is really back on its own, but it's still kind of caught in the middle. Rome is expanding again, and you know, Israel is kind of once again in the crosshairs. There is a king worth mentioning at this time. If you, I, collect Jewish coins like I do. You can, or I have in the past. I hadn't done it much lately, but Alexander Janaeus was one of the Hasmonean, was the name of the Maccabean line there that ruled. And actually under him, the kingdom almost approached, at least by land area, the area ruled by like David and Solomon. It actually grew out, and you know, they were doing pretty good underneath him for a while. But finally, kind of in the battle between the Seleucid Empire and the Romans, Israel gets swept into Rome. Rome sets up Herod as ruler. And that kind of sets up the world of the New Testament with the Herodian line in charge of things and Rome being the major power. And, you know, Herod the Great himself will be the king when Jesus is born. The other Herods mentioned in the Bible are, you know, his sons and his grandsons and stuff. And I've talked about that. If you go back and listen to my like John and Acts, the courses I've done, I'll explain about who some of those people were, and you can look that stuff up too. But anyway, the Herodian kings and rulers are in place. They are puppets of Rome. They're client kings of Rome. They're having to send tribute back to Rome. They are kept in power with Roman arms and, you know, Roman legionaries. So, you know, that's the world that the New Testament came to. So that's kind of what happened to get you from Malachi to Matthew in the silent years. Very briefly, and boy, it's a whole lot more complicated, a whole lot more fun than what I just did. And that's kind of one of those things, maybe sometime way off in the future, I've kind of thought, boy, it'd be neat to do a little course deal on that historic period, because there is so much that happens in that 400 years. Alexander the Great, and how Rome comes to be in control of Judea is just, you know, it's amazing history. And Herod is a very interesting character too. Not a very admirable one, but he's interesting to say the least. So, well, anyway, there we go. That gets us all the way up to the New Testament, which we will start in our next lesson. So I appreciate you listening. Check out BaptistBasics.org for other resources. Email me at podcast@BaptistBasics.org. You can follow Baptist Basics on Facebook. You can find the link on the webpage, or if you just search for BaptistBasics.org on Facebook, you ought to be able to find it. You can like me there. I do post updates when I release new recordings and stuff. I will post an update there so you'll know it's available. You can subscribe to, you know, the podcast feeds through iTunes or your podcast, you know, program of choice. But anyway, there you go. And by the way, let me throw this out to you. Listen, this stuff, I'm putting it out there to be used. Feel free to make a copy of it, to share it with somebody if you'd like, burn it to a CD. That's great with me. I want it to be a help and a blessing to people. So feel free to redistribute this stuff if you know somebody that you think it would help them. So that's why I'm doing this, is to help people. So anyway, that's it. I'm Matthew Gage. I appreciate you listening today. I hope it's been a help and a blessing to you.